I'm Kay Firth Butterfield at the World Economic Forum.
And I'm Miriam Vogel with Equal AI. And this is In AI We Trust. Hello and welcome back to In AI We Trust. Today we are so pleased to be joined by Helen Toner, Director of Strategy and Foundational Research Grants at Georgetown Center for Security and Emerging Technology, CSET. Previously, Helen worked as a senior research analyst at Open Philanthropy, where she advised policymakers and grantmakers on AI policy and strategy and served as a board member at OpenAI. Between working at Open Philanthropy and joining CSET, Helen lived in Beijing, studying the Chinese AI ecosystem as a research affiliate of Oxford University's Center for the Governance of AI. She has testified and written for several outlets, including Foreign Affairs, on the national security implications of artificial intelligence and machine learning for China and the US. Helen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Helen, people may have heard your name a bit recently. I know you've had a busy few months with regard to your board service at OpenAI. But if it's okay with you, we wanted to take this opportunity to dive in on all the work that you've been doing in the meantime. And to start off, we really wanted to focus on your journey into this space, which is now such a hot topic of national security technology and the intersection between the two. But you've been in this space for quite some time. Can you tell us what first sparked your interest in these areas?
It was really the start of the deep learning boom, though I was personally a couple of years late to that deep learning boom, which was really 2011, 2012, where we started seeing those new algorithms, deep neural networks, making progress on problems AI scientists had been struggling with for decades, problems like computer vision, image recognition, speech recognition, those kinds of things. So that kind of kicked off 2011, 2012. And around, I think, 2014 or 2015, I started noticing that some of my smartest and most thoughtful friends were telling me, you know, you should really pay attention to this AI stuff. There's really interesting things happening in this space. And at first, I kind of thought they were sci-fi nerds who were getting overexcited, but eventually I started looking into it a little bit myself. I actually did Andrew Ng's old Stanford course on machine learning over Coursera in 2014 and started to realize that there did actually seem to be something pretty interesting going on there. So that was when my interest first was piqued, and it took until around more like 2016, 2017 for me to get into the space professionally, which is when I started working on AI policy issues at Open Philanthropy, and especially becoming really interested in the national security angles of that. So that's when I started focusing more of my full-time efforts on the space.
And speaking of the foreign affairs element that you leaned into and do lean into in your space, we've noticed you've had several reports in the last year alone, including your work decoding China's AI policies. So why don't we start there? What do we need to know about China's approach to AI regulation? And how do you decipher between what's being said and what's really happening on the ground?
I got interested in China's AI policy via being interested in AI and national security more broadly. I'm based in Washington, D.C., and here, if you start talking about technology and national security, then almost the next word out of anyone's mouth is going to be China. So that's why I started looking into this space several years ago. And what we're seeing now is that China has been pretty proactive in regulating AI. They have a very cross-cutting set of laws and regulations around digital technologies, cyberspace more generally. Obviously, they have a huge interest in making sure that they control speech on the internet and that they really know everything that's going on inside the country. Specifically on AI, they have been fairly active. They put out three sets of regulations over the past few years. The first one was on recommender systems, which at the time I thought was really interesting because recommender systems are one of the most widespread forms of AI. This is what ranks your Facebook feed. It's what promotes particular TikTok or YouTube videos to you, what helps you decide what to buy on Amazon. But I hadn't really seen at the time any other countries particularly targeting recommender systems. So I thought that was an interesting choice from China in, I think, 2021. And since then, they've also put out two sets of regulations specifically on generative AI. And what you can see there is that they're trying to do this balancing act between, on the one hand, security and social control, which is a huge priority of the Chinese Communist Party, of course, but on the other hand, also really wanting to promote growth and innovation. So they see AI and digital technologies and other technologies more broadly as one of their best ways to promote China as a world leader and also to overcome some of the kind of macroeconomic challenges that they're facing. So on AI, they're kind of torn between these two different approaches. On the one hand, a sort of let it rip, you know, really try to promote innovation, let companies do what they want, try and let things flourish. But on the other hand, really wanting to make sure that if you ask a chatbot about something, you know, people use the example of Tiananmen Square. If you ask it about Tiananmen Square, does it give you a politically inappropriate answer in the eyes of the Chinese government? But there's actually a ton of topics that are sensitive in China. So it's not just that. It's also, what if they ask about what democracy is and what democracy looks like in China? What if they ask about economic growth in China and how that's been going and how that's compared to Communist Party predictions? What if they ask about the war in Russia and Ukraine and how that's going and who's at fault? And there's many, many different types of topics that are very sensitive. So as generative AI has become more popular, they have had to really think about how to regulate that sector and make sure that it stays constrained. So they're, I think, like all governments trying to regulate AI, they're still in the early stages. It still remains to be seen exactly how that's working. They have taken some interesting different tactics. For instance, having an algorithmic registry where you have to register certain kinds of AI systems with the government. And in the case of generative AI systems, have to get approval before you're able to use that. So we'll see how that works for them. In terms of, you know, you asked about understanding what's really happening on the ground versus what they're saying. I think in a lot of cases, when it comes to regulating industry and regulating online activity or consumer internet products, a lot of what they say and what they put out is accurate, that these companies really are constrained by the rules that are put out in terms of how they're allowed to use customers' data and things like that, or getting approval for these generative AI products before they're used. Where things are, of course, a little bit more opaque is when it comes to the security state. So how is the government surveilling its own citizens? What kinds of technology is being developed in those parts of government? So that's, I think, where we need to be. I mean, of course, in general, we have to be humble about our ability to know things with certainty. But I think sometimes I come across a perception that Chinese regulations are just fake or just for show. And I think when it comes to consumer internet and cyberspace regulations, that's not true. The companies truly are constrained by these, again, in the interest of the government, in the interest of, you know, the different objectives that the government is pursuing. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, I guess, overall.
But it's also so interesting when you talk about some of the themes that are a priority in China to think about the fact that much of what you described are also current conversations and priorities that are under hot debate here in the US and in countries across the globe, balancing between innovation and control. Now, I wouldn't say we're investing as heavily as the government in innovation as they are, nor would I say we are as concerned about the social constraints and control. But, you know, the similar balance trying to be struck here in our approach, as well as even the registry you talk about, which, you know, is another medium being discussed here for potential legislation. But given that, as you say, this is top of mind for anyone thinking about national security regulation or really accelerating in this space. One of the concerns is that you hear, I'm sure, all the time, the U.S. should not be regulating, that most countries should not be regulating in this space because it'll put us at a disadvantage in the global AI race, and particularly vis-a-vis China. So how do you answer that question?
Yeah, I definitely do hear this argument. And I think it's not a particularly strong argument for a few reasons. Firstly, because, you know, as we just discussed, China is very actively regulating its AI sector. They need to keep a tight hand on it. So I don't think we should just picture them as sailing right past the US if there are any constraints in the US context. I think there's this idea, sort of maybe from the mid-2010s, that China just lets its tech sector run rampant, do whatever it wants. And that's a really out of date idea if you've been following the space and following the different ways that they have cracked down on different parts of their tech sector and specifically on AI, the ways that they are making sure that they have a really tight leash on what the sector is doing. Secondly, you know, China is facing some pretty significant macro headwinds, I would say, that mean that it's not at all clear how much they're going to continue to be a really meaningful competitor or how well they will continue to succeed in AI. I don't want to overstate this. China is definitely doing some super interesting things in the AI space, but they are also subject to some pretty significant, you know, economic slowdown dynamics that are causing difficulties. They have a real problem with youth unemployment right now. And then also more sort of AI specifically, they have these issues getting access to semiconductors, given the restrictions that the US has placed on them, which are especially acute for the most advanced kinds of AI systems. So again, I think, should we be taking them seriously as a competitor? Yes. Should we be thinking of them as kind of nipping at our heels and poised to just race past if we make one tiny stumble? I don't think so. And then I also think there's a final reason that I don't super by the, well, we can't regulate because that'll slow us down and then China will beat us, which is that I think smart regulation doesn't have to slow down innovation. And in fact, the right kinds of regulation can speed up innovation by, for example, in the AI case, consumer trust is a huge problem. People don't really trust AI systems. They're very unsure when they can use them and when they can rely on them. And so if you have a regulatory setup that is well-designed, these are all big ifs, of course, you can actually foster the industry, help it grow, help it develop, rather than just slowing it down. So I think it's important also not to assume that regulation automatically equals less innovation, because I think that's not clearly the case.
I really want to dig in more on each of those, but particularly the final point. I think you're so spot on that we'll have a trust problem if we want to accelerate, if we want to gain more traction for AI, if we want to use it in its best use. We're going to have to build trust, and we're going to have to make sure that the AI systems deserve our trust. And so I am definitely going to ask you more about that. But before we go there, I want to finish out a little bit more of the conversation on the national security implications that I know you think about all the time. So beyond China, what do you think we need to make sure to have our eye on here in the US with regard to national security implications?
Yeah, two huge areas I think we need to keep an eye on here are what AI means for warfare and what it means for cybersecurity. Of course, these aren't totally separate from each other, but let's treat them as two buckets. So in warfare, militaries use technology in all kinds of different ways, and automation is not new on the battlefield. But what is new here is the way that deep learning technologies work, the reliability issues they pose, the explainability issues they pose. You know, we really don't have a good in principle understanding of how to break down any given deep learning model and really understand in detail what exactly is going on inside it. And so that causes a problem if countries feel pressured to deploy AI because they think their competitors are deploying AI on the battlefield and they have to keep up. Maybe, you know, the speed of warfare is going to get faster or other reasons. I think we need to be pretty careful that countries don't end up deploying AI systems that they don't actually think are ready for prime time, but where they feel pressure to do so because their competitors are doing so or because they think their competitors are doing so. The kinds of issues that I would worry about in terms of why does it matter if these systems are unreliable or unexplainable, you know, hopefully it's relatively clear why that would matter in a battlefield context. But the kinds of things that I think are in a shared interest of all kinds of different countries. So something the US and China could work together on, for example, is how do you handle it if you have an AI-driven accident, you know, an unintended engagement of a target, for example? How do you make sure that you don't end up with escalation happening in a crisis or in a conflict situation where actually neither side particularly wants to escalate, but the involvement of AI systems, whether those be autonomous systems or systems that are working with humans in some way, how do you ensure that that doesn't lead to situations spiraling out of control? I think this is something that the kind of thing that the US and China are intending to talk about in these dialogues about AI that they have agreed to have. I think they agreed last year in San Francisco when Xi came to visit. So I'm hopeful that the right people are taking these challenges seriously, but I do think they're serious. The second bucket, cybersecurity. AI systems today are already pretty good at coding, at programming, and I think they're only going to get better from here. And being good at hacking comes along with that, essentially. Now, the jury is still very much out on whether AI systems getting better at hacking ends up being better for the offense or the defense side of things. So it could very well be that AI systems are a huge boon to cyber defense, to, you know, monitoring, to patching, to all of those things. But I do worry that we're not sure that that will be true. And in particular, I worry about things like critical infrastructure, where cybersecurity for critical infrastructure is absolutely paramount because it's a question of can an adversary take out your water system, your power grid, et cetera, et cetera. But as any cybersecurity professional, and I'm not one, but as any will tell you, patching bugs and fixing holes in critical infrastructure in these big physical systems is very slow and very difficult. And so I do worry a little about the possibility that increased AI capabilities in hacking lower the barriers to being able to attack these kinds of critical infrastructure systems, and that those attacks become available at a speed that the defenders are not ready to fight back against. Again, the jury is out. We'll see if any of this eventuates, and if so, how serious it gets. But I think those are a couple of big areas of national security implications that we should be keeping an eye on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for keeping our eyes on those critical issues. And we'll look forward to reading more of your reports to figure out what we should be doing to reduce these significant potential concerns. But also wanted to go back to your discussion on regulation, with the core element being, how do we build trust? How do we deserve that these systems deserve trust. And you also mentioned something in your answer with regard to the AI and warfare, this significant concern that we're all grappling with, where even those who are creating the technologies don't fully understand how it's working, how, particularly with generative AI, it's coming up with certain conclusions. So how do we square this peg? How would you advise regulators? How do you advise regulators on how to manage these uncertainties in regulating for AI? And who also do you think should be in charge of oversight in this space?
I think the regulating in the face of uncertainty or governing in the face of uncertainty is a huge theme of the times that we're in right now. Honestly, anyone who claims to know for sure where things are going with AI from here, I think is selling you something. Because if you look at the different ways that we've been surprised over the past few years about what kinds of tasks AI can do when, you know, beating the world champion at Go, being able to speak in type to you in very fluent English that in all kinds of different styles, these are things that were thought of generating these beautiful pictures. I don't think there's anywhere on the planet who has a great track record of predicting what those kinds of breakthroughs would look like. And then if you talk to some of the world's most respected experts in AI, you know, award-winning computer scientists who have been part of the deep learning field from the beginning, they disagree enormously with each other about where things are going. So I do think that we need to have that in the backdrop, that whatever we're doing here, it needs to be designed to manage uncertainty, to manage a wide range of potential futures, which I think means trying to have as clear a picture as we can of where we are now and where we're going, and also trying to remain adaptable. In terms of who should regulate AI, what makes this a really challenging question, as you know, is how general purpose AI is, how multi-purpose it is, how multi-sector it is inherently. So on the one hand, I think part of the answer has to be when AI is being used in a specific sector, it will generally make sense for the regulators appropriate to that sector to be regulating the use of AI. So AI in the banking system, we have very sophisticated banking regulators filled with a great deal of expertise required to understand everything about that sector. We should be ensuring that they have the regulatory authorities they need and that they have access to the AI expertise they need to be managing those problems. But it makes sense for the banking regulators to handle AI in banking, for the FDA to handle the use of AI in medical care, for the FAA to handle the use of AI in aviation, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's also the challenge of issues that kind of fall through the cracks. One way we saw this was with the EU's AI Act, where they had really designed the whole piece of legislation around being able to categorize AI according to use case, or, you know, which is related to categorizing according to sector. And then when they're in the middle of that process of developing that law, of course, ChatGPT came out and the whole European Parliament realized like, oh, hang on, this actually doesn't have a clear use case. This has all kinds of different use cases. And so we're going to have a different way of handling that. So I think we also do need some kind of new regulatory setup. I don't know if it's a whole new agency, if it's an office within an existing part of government, perhaps the Department of Commerce would be a natural choice that is trying to catch some of these cross-cutting issues. So these would include things like Deb Raji, who is a fantastic researcher at Mozilla and UC Berkeley. So she does a lot of work on the importance of third-party audits and having external scrutiny on AI systems. And she's pointed to this board called the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. In the financial sector, it's a government board that oversees auditors, essentially, and makes sure that auditors are up to scratch. So if you were to have something like that in the AI context, you know, a piece of government that is looking at third-party companies that go in and examine AI companies and says whether those auditing companies are doing good work, where would that sit? That's not really a sectoral thing. Does that need to be in some separate place? Likewise, if we're looking at the particular problems and kind of novel risks that are caused by the very most cutting edge AI systems, especially cutting edge general purpose AI systems. So these would be systems like GPT-4 from OpenAI or Google's Gemini. They've just announced Anthropic launched Claude 3, I think, you know, this week or very recently. These systems, again, don't fit into an existing sector very neatly. And so I think it might make sense to have some kind of additional body that is trying to understand how those systems are developing, what kinds of new risks they're posing, and how best to manage those. But it's definitely a difficult juggling act given kind of how multifaceted AI is as a set of technologies.
Absolutely. And in your vision, if all the regulators listening were to follow up on your guidance, first of all, are they equipped in the US or anywhere? But let's start with the US. Are regulators equipped to take on this task currently? You mentioned the great work at Commerce and at NIST. Are they, and others you mentioned, including the FDA or FTC, SEC, able to take on this huge task? And are there other ways that we need to be doing it? Meaning, given that AI is global and cross-border, I wonder how you handle that wrinkle in thinking about who is regulating or should be regulating in this space.
Yeah, I mean, I think the existing regulators are doing heroic work trying to keep up with this technology. I know the Biden administration has really emphasized being able to hire AI talent into government. That was a big part of the executive order that was released last October. I think that is a huge piece of the puzzle here is, you know, to the extent we're talking about existing regulators in a specific sector, you know, they know their sector well. Do they know AI well? Do they have people there who they can talk to who understand how the technology works? I think that's a huge piece. In terms of the international governance side of things, which you sort of gestured towards, I think many of the challenges that we have to deal with do pretty naturally fit within domestic regulation. If you're thinking about, again, something like a use of AI in the banking system or healthcare app that uses AI, I think that's a pretty natural fit for governments to regulate in their own jurisdictions. The question for me is more what I think the place where you would start needing to look at international cooperation is if the problems that are being caused are more transnational in nature. And the place this becomes relevant is with some of the more sort of forward-looking speculative risks that many people in the space are concerned about, though there's a lot of uncertainty around. So things like, does AI really change the game in hacking, for example, in cyber offense? Does it make it much easier to create bioweapons? Has been a big topic of discussion over the past year in Washington. Do you have these sort of more inherently transnational issues becoming more of a problem? I guess also, you know, the questions around military usage and warfare are also kind of good candidates for international discussions. I think there's been some attempts to handle some of these kinds of issues at the international level, some more successful than others. There was this big process at the UN around autonomous weapons that I think people generally believe has not really gone anywhere, unfortunately. But there are other sets of discussions. The UK ran its AI safety summit last year, which seemed to be relatively successful, and I think is going to be repeated in other countries this year. So I don't know. I think the global question is really still a question mark and is going to depend on where the technology goes and how necessary those kinds of global governance seem.
Yeah. And, you know, for several of these questions, while you make the good point that it fits into our domestic regulatory functions, I'm sure it would be appreciated by those creating, deploying, licensing AI to have more consistency. And one area in particular is an evaluation of AI systems so that they can be built to be compliant and be clear on what that compliance would look like, no matter where it's used or deployed. And I know this is something you've given a lot of thought to. So can you share with our listeners some of your research on the mechanisms and factors that should be used, in your opinion, when evaluating AI systems?
Yeah, this is a huge challenge. And I think the situation at the moment is a bit of a mess. I should also make sure to give credit to colleagues of mine at the organization I work at, CSET, the Center for Security and Emerging Technology, who have done really great work on our assessment team, we call them, does work on AI evaluations and standard setting and things like this. So I'm often just drawing on things that smarter colleagues have told me. But if we think about, you know, the way that AI systems are evaluated at the moment, it's generally pretty messy. There's often different data sets that have been put together by different groups that just happen to include different questions, whatever that group thought made sense to put into that data set. There's very little science to it. There's very little agreement on which data sets are, these get called benchmark data sets, you know, or benchmarks. You know, which benchmarks do you use in what setting? How much should you trust different benchmarks? It's kind of the Wild West out there right now. I think there's a few different problems we need to address here. One is, I think there are areas where we have a little bit of a clearer idea sort of what the problem we're trying to tackle is. So for example, if we're talking about disparate impact in an area like employment, hiring, or loan decisions, we have some pretty robust concepts around that. And so what we mostly need now are clear standards and standardized methodologies for testing those technologies, rather than it just being this kind of everyone choose their own adventure approach. And then in other areas, especially at the cutting edge of the technology, we almost need new science to understand what these systems can do and how good they are and how capable they are. Because again, you know, some of the best researchers in the world just really fiercely disagree about, do the best large language models have anything like understanding? Like, do they have a world model? These are these extremely controversial questions in the field that I think would really benefit our ability to kind of adapt to and cope with the progress in this technology if we had a clear understanding of the answers to those questions. So I think there's a lot of different challenges we need to address when it comes to evaluating AI systems, measuring how capable they are, measuring whether they have other properties that are important for understanding how trustworthy or reliable or unbiased or so on they are. And I think that there's been a fair amount of interest in this over the last 6 to 12 months. And I'm hoping that it's something that we'll see good progress on over the coming year or two. And certainly, as you say, it's an area where maybe we don't need necessarily formalized global institutions, but it would make a lot of sense to have that kind of international coordination and information sharing and standard setting in a cooperative way. So I'm hopeful that we'll see good progress on it, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, from your mouth, certainly an area going back to the building of trust and making sure that systems deserve our trust and helping more people understand what questions they should be asking, as every company is probably now using AI. I think most companies are now AI companies, whether they know it or not, because of their reliance on AI for pivotal issues. But yet so many teams have not been trained. They're not prepared necessarily for this, let alone boards or others with oversight, and need to know what questions to ask and what the answers should look like so that they could ask a follow-up and know what to do with that information should they ask the question, which I hope they will feel empowered to do in the coming years.
Absolutely.
And want to make sure that we touch on another important area of your work where, again, we are seeing such influx of AI into our life, and that's through AI agents. And I know with your work, you're thinking about next generation, or perhaps it's current, where AI systems are carrying out so many tasks that are happening more or less autonomously, including execution of purchases and navigation. And I'm wondering, in your view, given how much work you're spending and time you're spending on these issues, how quickly do you think these systems are going to be part of our daily life? What will these systems look like as compared to what we are seeing today that has already been so revelatory for so many people? And from your perspective, as this becomes more a part of our daily lives and our work, what are some of the top concerns we need to be thinking about with these AI agents?
This is a new stream of work we're spinning up, so we haven't published anything on it yet, but very interested to look more into it. And yeah, as you say, the idea of thinking about AI agents is, what if you have an AI system that, instead of being, say, a chatbot that sits in your browser and just populates text into a little text field, what if you have a system that can go out and take actions in the real world? And in fact, a lot of different AI developers in Silicon Valley and elsewhere are really trying to build systems that can do exactly that. So systems that can book a flight for you, schedule a meeting for you, but also, you know, that's sort of the less ambitious version that we might see relatively soon. But if you talk to people developing these systems, they really think in big terms. So could you have a system that is managing inventory for a large company? Could you have a system that is acting as CEO of a large company and really, you know, handling all of the business operations and all of the strategy and everything? I'm not saying those systems are around the corner, but they're definitely kind of where AI developers are trying to push things. And if we do end up with technology like this, in some ways it will be similar to previous technologies, as is always the case with AI. But I think there are also important differences if you have a technology, an AI agent that is out there kind of carrying out complex goals in an adaptable way in open-ended environments. You know, we're really used to thinking about technology as a tool in the hands of a particular user. And I think this starts to blur some of the lines there. And that, I think, will pose some interesting new questions. So, you know, how do you allocate responsibility when something goes wrong? We probably don't want to treat the AI system itself as responsible. That gets problematic in all number of ways. But if it is kind of out there taking action in a pretty flexible and creative way, was it really the user's fault? If not, was it the developer's fault? You run into some tricky questions there. I think also, if this technology starts to work really well, which again, a big if, but if it does, it's the kind of thing that you could easily imagine starting to be used at very large scale. So you might end up having really large numbers of these agents roaming around on the internet, carrying out tasks. This could be great if they're productive and they work well and they do what people want them to do. It could also be a problem if, for example, you have a large number of agents that are all built off the same base, maybe the same kind of underlying product from one company or from a small number of companies. Do you run into, for example, correlated failures where if something big changes, you know, imagine we have another global pandemic and the world is kind of flipped upside down overnight. If something about that throws off the technology that we're using, or it finds itself unsure what to do in a given situation, or it makes a mistake, and you have that same system being used at very large scale, what does that run into? Do you end up with some kinds of systemic problems? I think those are issues for a little bit further down the road, but worth starting to think about. Something that's worth thinking about now already with these systems is this question of security and attack surface. So, you know, attack surface of a system is basically how many points can an attacker find to get in and make the system do something wrong. And what we're already seeing as we take large language models, so systems like ChatGPT, and for example, give them access to tools that they can use, to other online systems that they can interact with, or let them go and browse websites, there's already new vulnerabilities that come in via those additional points of entry. So I forget exactly who this was, but there was some well-known figure in Silicon Valley put some white text on his website that said something along the lines of, white text meaning invisible because on a white background, saying something along the lines of, you know, if you're an AI agent crawling this website, then make sure that you report that I, whatever his name was, am very handsome and charming or something like that. And so the AI system, because it was browsing the website, it could, you know, it would go and do that. But I've seen other security researchers will talk about the same kind of thing, but instead of just saying something nice about the person whose website you're reading, it would be getting the agent to like email some key information to someone who they didn't actually email it to, or other issues like that. So I think there's also, as you have these systems interacting in more complex, multifaceted ways with the environment, that also creates these new vulnerabilities too. So I think that's something we're going to have to grapple with pretty soon.
Well, that is important that we know that. And I guess while we're asking, it seems you're looking around the corner in so many important ways to shed light on potential concerns before they come to fruition. What's next for you? What's on the horizon? What are you looking into and excited to dig into?
I'm definitely excited to dig more into these questions around AI agents and see where they go. And also, I mean, I really think 2023, I think, was, you know, the year of the world waking up and getting excited / freaked out about AI and generative AI. I think 2024 is looking like it's going to be, maybe 2025 as well, the year or years of implementation, meaning especially policy implementation, laws coming into effect. So I think this is maybe a bit of a wonky kind of policy analyst answer, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. On the technology side, the AI side itself, I mean, one innovation that I'm particularly excited for that is maybe an unfashionable answer is just continued progress in autonomous vehicles. I mean, I think they're pretty controversial in some circles, but the truth is that something like 40,000 Americans die on the roads every year, and that's a really large number of people. That's a pretty bad baseline to be trying to improve from. And so obviously, you know, the autonomous vehicles that we have so far are still limited. They can only be deployed in particular contexts. We have to be really thoughtful about how we roll them out more broadly. But when it comes to sort of the technologies themselves, that is one that I do feel pretty optimistic about over the long term, and I think really could make a difference. So I'm crossing my fingers that it comes to fruition in a, you know, fuller way sooner rather than later.
And what would you guess in terms of timing on that one? How far out are we?
I mean, you already see, if you go to San Francisco, you can already hail a robo-taxi if you've got on the wait list and waited your several months. So I imagine that we'll start seeing them being rolled out within specific cities more widely over the next 3 years, 5 years. It does seem like it's going to take longer before the challenges of being able to handle all the different edge cases in an open world environment where there's all kinds of different pedestrians and squirrels and plastic bags and is really difficult. So I suspect it will take a while longer before we have them just fully deployed in an unrestricted way on all kinds of roads. But I'm hoping for a kind of increased deployment in urban centers over the next few years.
That is an exciting development, and it may be the answer, but just in case it's not, I still want to ask you the question we ask all of our guests. You've told us a lot we need to be worried about. You've given us some things to be hopeful for. You gave us something that could be on the 3 to 5 year horizon with safety and vehicles. Looking far beyond, as you do, in a way that so few people aren't able to and don't, what in the future is the AI innovation you are most excited to see come to fruition?
I mean, if we're looking far in the future, it's kind of hard to name one. You know, there's so many possibilities if the technology develops in the way that we really hope that it will. I think revolutionizing energy technology. Could we have better batteries because the AI systems can find new materials? There's already research on AI stabilizing core parts of nuclear fusion. Could we actually get nuclear fusion energy? That would be absolutely incredible. AI for agriculture, AI for healthcare, AI for all kinds of things. Maybe I'll stick with the energy example because I do just think there's, you know, could you get more efficient solar panels? Could you more efficiently allocate energy between different parts of the grid at different times of day and forecast what's going to be needed when? I think there's so many potential applications if we can build systems that are reliable enough and flexible enough, and if we can have the right incentives in place for the big challenges that we face to be solved using AI. So that's what I'm crossing my fingers for.
Well, we all will be too. Helen, thank you so much for taking time to share with us your deep insights into what can be, what we hope will be, what we hope we can avoid in terms of the pitfalls from AI, and really aligning us on what we can look forward to if we do this right.
Thanks so much, Miriam. This was great.
Subscribe to or download our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We always welcome your feedback. And if you like the podcast, please rate us or give us a review. To learn more or get involved, visit us at www.equalai.org and www.weforum.org.
And a special thanks to NP Agency, without whom this podcast would not be possible.